Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right, welcome to Rogue Startups, episode 236. Craig, how are you today?
I'm good, man. I'm good. I've been very busy the last couple of weeks, like looking at my calendar. It's just like this sea of blue. But yeah, it's good, man. I think overall I'm being pretty productive, which is like I can be busy as long as I'm busy in a good way. So yeah, it's not bad. How about you?
Well, we are doing okay over here at Recapture and so on and so forth. We survived Black Friday with no problems, but I think I had already mentioned that. And we haven't seen any like big surges or problems since. I think there's like one minor infrastructure glitch that my developer is looking at, and the content stuff is underway. I just saw some outlines of basic stuff that I wanted to approve, and you know, just trying to fine tune some of the content there. But yeah, everything is looking pretty good. We're actually seeing some good revenue growth this month in Recapture, which I'm excited to see. It's been kind of flat over the last few months with people's business kind of dying out, and I see churn from that. And you know, it's the kind of churn that you can't do a damn thing about when somebody's business closes up or, you know, starts to dry up. But yep, that seems to be reversing here a little bit for the holidays, which I'm excited about. And, you know, coupled with our push in marketing come January, that should be a good place to be.
Yeah, I definitely have seen, like for us, I think we see churn, or as like price sensitivity, churn and like just price on like our Castos Productions / Podcast Motor stuff really quickly, and have definitely seen that in the last month or so. We're recording this like the first part of December, but like, yeah, I've definitely seen a lot of questions. And maybe it's kind of end of the year / like COVID finally taking its toll on some businesses, I think, that like, yeah, people are tightening the purse strings and like looking at expenses maybe into the new year. But yeah, it's definitely been like a lot of questions about like, how am I doing on this? And what am I, plan am I on here? Yeah, it's interesting. Do you guys have like a, I know you have like a technical like pencils down date, which might have kind of already happened for like things going into production, but do you have like a marketing initiative stop date or anything else like around the holidays, ahead of the holidays?
Well, we weren't really doing any marketing during the holidays here because, you know, while everybody else is like trying to push for Black Friday deals and things like that, it just doesn't make any sense for anybody who's signing up for Recapture because they're doing their own Black Friday stuff and we just get lost in the noise.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've never tried it, but I also don't see any of my competitors ever doing this. Like nobody's out there pushing saying, hey, it's a Black Friday deal on email marketing. And it's like, wait a minute, no. We're already doing the email marketing for Black Friday. If you haven't done it by now, it's too fucking late.
Yep.
So that just doesn't seem to happen in our space here. That, you know, the real push seems to happen like September, October, where everybody's kind of out there banging the drums, trying to get people off the fence saying, look, if you need help with Black Friday, now is the time to ask me, because in a month, it will not be the time to ask me. And then you're going to come ask me and I'm going to have to say no, and you will be very sad.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, our marketing stuff kind of died off probably early October at this point. I just didn't push any more after that. So for us, it's, you know, the push to production and other stuff, you know, we've made some minor edits to things and push that out there, a couple of bug fixes and things, but we're not, you know, we're doing some development on the side here. That's nothing major because I'm trying to focus more on the marketing than I am the feature stuff, but we've got a little bit of work on the SMS to do before we go out public on that. And, yeah, no real push right now.
Yeah, we have like, I think we're going to try to wrap everything up by like the 18th. So like that Friday before the week of Christmas on a Friday or Saturday this year. So like have, you know, the first couple of days of the next week to iron out any bugs, but hopefully not releasing anything for like the 3 weeks around like Christmas, New Year's, and the first of the year from like a technical perspective. And then like from marketing, yeah, it's interesting, like definitely pushing a lot of things like webinars and blog posts and stuff like that. Like if they're not going out next week, like the week of the 15th, they're going out the beginning of the year. Cause yeah, people just stop looking and stop caring about new stuff, I think. Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, no, there's no question that, you know, we're about to hit the holiday dead zone. You know, I can feel it with job hunting, and I can also feel it with my freelance client, where they're, you know, they're saying basically this Friday is the last release of the year, and then that's it. They just go into lockdown mode themselves because they don't want to introduce any, you know, craziness between now and December 31st, January 1st, with people going on vacation and just not paying attention to what's going on, focused on the holidays, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm getting fewer recruiter emails right now, which is always a sign that the market is slowing down.
So we had an interesting discussion in a Slack group that we're both a part of, last week, around kind of like business finance and kind of how we think about cash in the bank and how we spend the money and things like that. And thought it'd be a fun discussion for us to kind of chat through, not the specifics maybe, but kind of our thought process around, yeah, how we think about business finance in this episode, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. So one of the questions was, how do you deal with the whole notion of cash in the bank for your business? Like, how much do you keep? What's the formula to decide I have too much or I don't have enough? And what do you do with that? Do you, you know, pull it over to your personal accounts? Do you put it in a secondary account? All sorts of things. And the opinions that this elicited across the board were quite interesting. So I think maybe we should probably start with, you know, what we do personally, you know, to a certain extent, and then maybe talk about some alternatives that we heard in that discussion. What do you think?
Yeah. For me, I think that like a lot of it starts with what the bigger goal of the business is. And like, this is the differentiation between like a lifestyle business. And that, to me, that does not have a negative connotation. That's really great. And I'm really envious of a lot of people in the Slack group that you know, take a lot of profit from their business. Or people that kind of reinvest everything back in the business, thinking that like the business is their biggest and best asset slash place to kind of invest their money. And so they don't take as much money out of there. So I think that for me, that is like the pretty polarizing difference between kind of how people think about money in their business. And if there's extra, what do they do with it? You know, if there's extra, do they hire or do they take it out as a dividend? But that seems to me like the first decision a lot of people make. And for me, we invest everything. Like I pay myself a you know, nice, fair salary, but everything else goes back into the business above that to a pretty fair extent. How about you?
So I've had two different strategies on this at this point. So let me talk about the plugins first. When I did the plugins, so they would basically end up not exactly going, like I had a PayPal set up and then I had a Stripe set up and then both of them would funnel into a single bank account. So the Stripe one would automatically sweep. The PayPal one I had to pull over periodically because they didn't have an automatic recovery the way that Stripe does. But I used to have this heuristic that would say, I need to keep $5,000 a month in there to cover whatever. So that would basically be like, probably, you know, at one point it was like an entire month's payroll. As things wore on, it was probably more like 3 weeks of payroll. And it would also allow me other things like just basic business expenses. So like if everything just came to a grinding halt spontaneously in 1 week, you know, not that this ever happened. And, you know, I've never seen it so catastrophic that everything just went off a cliff all at once. But this was my mindset at the time. I wanted to have something in the bank that if the business went off a cliff, I could still meet my obligations and, you know, unwind everything in a reasonable way without having to stiff anybody. That was sort mm-hmm. of my thinking. And as time went on, what was interesting is, you know, this 5,000 buffer was basically my low point in the bank account. And I never went below that for like 8 years until I, you know, just sold the business in August. That was the first time I ever got to touch that 5,000 buffer.
Nice. That's great.
Yeah. So, I mean, for years and years and years, I think I went a little bit below it occasionally, like 4,800 or 4,500 or something like that, because I was trying to sweep out. But my algorithm was always, I would let it build up to about 15,000, and then I would sweep 10 out. And so whatever that took, you know, sometimes it was 3 weeks, sometimes it was 6 weeks, sometimes it was 4 weeks. It just depended on where I was, you know, in any part of the year with the business, I would sweep that back out. And so that was my paycheck from the plugins. And you know, I did that because, you know, 10K was always a good chunk of something to do stuff with. So that, you know, would pay for, you know, remodeling of the house, or maybe it would be funding a vacation, or, you know, maybe that's something we needed to replenish our savings, or, you know, whatever. So that, yep, that came out as a workable chunk that, you know, it was substantial. I felt like I could do something with it. I wouldn't be like, oh, $1,000, you know, oh, that's just going to sit in my checking account and I'll accidentally spend it. But with 10, I always felt like I have to focus on this and I want to put it somewhere and do something conscious with it. That was sort of my mindset with it. With recapture, I haven't been in the same mode as that. So in the last year, up until probably about last month, all of the funding for recapture pretty much went to pay for development. I wasn't actually taking any profit from recapture at all. So when I got
not paying yourself anything?
I wasn't paying myself anything with recapture. I'm still okay. Not.
Yeah.
But what I would do is, like, as the business grew and I got bigger, I looked to bring on other resources. So that basically was allowing me to go from one developer part-time to one developer full-time to two developers full-time. So that allowed me to make, you know, features happen more quickly. But then we got to a point where I was like, I don't need more features now. So now I'm down to like one developer part-time, and that's just keeping the lights on at this point and fixing bugs and doing customer support and that sort of stuff. So the rest of it now is dedicated to the marketing effort. And then once I grow it past a certain point next year, I'll probably start going into the same thing where I'll keep a buffer. I'll sweep out chunks, probably at 10K a pop, back into my account. And that way, you know, I get, you know, some safety in the business. I have this, you know, we'll call it a security blanket, I guess. I can sleep well at night knowing that I have enough,
yeah,
whatever that is.
Yeah.
I think my buffer is probably going to be a little bit bigger because recapture is a bigger business than the plugins were. You know, there's more infrastructure stuff with it. My infrastructure nut every month is way bigger than it was with the plugins because it's SaaS and I have an AWS bill and a database bill. I didn't have those really with the plugins. So yeah, I mean, it's different. Each of them has its pluses and minuses there. How about you?
Yeah. I didn't really think about like how I thought about money with Podcast Motor, but it was very much a lifestyle business. I basically took out everything I could all the time. I mean, I was paying myself like payroll, but I would pay myself distributions anytime there was a sizable amount of money in the bank. Maybe like $5,000 extra or something like that I felt like I could take out. And I probably had, about a month's worth of expenses, like salary, that I kept in there. So similar kind of thing that you're talking about with the plugins. With Castos, it's been interesting. At the beginning, we ran it like there was no money in the bank because we were just like trying to put everything back into it because it's so hard to get like a decent SaaS app for me as like a non-technical founder. Like, got to pay developers, got to pay, you know, designers and infrastructure and all this crap. And like, there was just no money for like the first year and I wasn't paying myself anything. Then I started paying myself and there was a little bit of money. And then we joined Tiny Seed and that was really weird because, and this was like my one piece of feedback to Rob and Einar was nobody talked about how to manage negative cash flow in the program, you know, because it's a thing that a lot of business owners have never had. It's like, $100,000 in the bank and you should spend it like, you know, over some period of time, or you shouldn't have taken it. And so like, that was a learning opportunity for me to say like, okay, how do I think about going from this amount of money to like that new kind of safety buffer, you know, which is higher than, you know, $5,000 because we have more people. And like you said, SaaS, we have, you know, infrastructure and stuff like that. But like, how do you think of like, burning through this money in an effective way, right? But like to a point where you end up right at the right time where you're comfortable with what you have left and feel good that you've spent the money. You know, I think we did pretty good and had more money left over than I would have been comfortable with. Like I would have been comfortable with spending more, but I don't know. Now that I think about it, I don't know why we didn't. I kind of had in my mind, like, we'll hire Denise and she'll, you know, kind of come in for marketing and give her a budget. And that's just what we're going to spend. And I never updated it because I guess I realized like about 6 months through that, like, you know, we were growing, the rest of our expenses were about the same. And so like, we just ended up with a fair amount of that left over. But then we're starting to do that again now where like we were profitable again for a while, but now we're not. And kind of running through that same process again. But I have a much higher safety buffer that I'm comfortable with now. And it's like several months of salary, like 3 months of salary is what I'm comfortable with, or like some multiple of what our burn rate is. And like, I think at one point we were burning like 10,000 a month. And so like, just want to make sure that we can keep doing that and not have to like, you know, get rid of somebody or stop a big like ad experiment, whether we're running or something like that, because money gets tight. So, I mean, that's how we think about it. But yeah, I mean, in terms of like profit, everything stays in the business. Part of that is like a tiny seed thing because like, and I think this is public, like their terms are that like, you can't just pay yourself like $500,000 a year when tiny seed, or they get a part of it. And that's totally fair. They're investors. So they should, you know, get a share of it if, you know, the business is that profitable. But we've chosen to reinvest in the business. So it hasn't been so far.
Right, right. Yeah, that's fascinating. And yeah, I mean, it makes, I think one thing that we've learned anything from 2020, it's that if you don't have a buffer or a backstop when the shit hits the fan, you're going to get covered. You know, I mean, I felt very fortunate that both my consulting business and Recapture and even the plugins, you know, the plugins were just humming along. They didn't really have a major impact on there. You know, if anything, we had slight growth, which was still pretty amazing considering the circumstances. And Recapture had growth and my freelance client was fine. So, you know, we didn't take an economic hit, but, you know, I have always had this mentality and mindset, and it could just have come from years of consulting and gone through, you know, multiple recessions. You know, this is my third recession I've lived through in my economic productive
adulthood.
Years. Yeah, my economic adulthood. There you go. You know, there was one in, you know, right after the stock market crash of the early 2000s. And that one, I think, was perhaps the scariest because at the time, you know, I didn't have a ton of savings. I was lucky in that I was able to find a job, but I was out of a job for like a month and a half, maybe almost 2 months before I got, you know, paid again. Cause I went from one job to a contract. And that's when I became a full-time contractor. And I was right on the cusp of a divorce at the time. So like, you know, all of that sort of like, beat it into my head to say, you have to have a better plan for next time.
Yeah.
Cause this caught me very much off guard. And, you know, when I got through all of that and I did get through all of that and I didn't have to do bankruptcy and I didn't lose my shirt, but you know, I took a major hit on a lot of fronts and I said to myself, I don't want to be in this position again ever. And so it very much changed my mindset. So there was always okay, you got to have some amount of money in the bank. And then when I got married again, you know, that was a discussion that my wife and I had early on in the relationship. But the good news was, you know, we were both very much on the same page financially and she was very fiscally conservative and said, I want to make sure that we have the same thing in our bank account as well, because that's a safety net for both of us. But when you're with somebody else and you're starting a family, that safety net has to be that much bigger. So, you know, we put aside a savings account. And so personally, you know, we've always kept that at a certain level where it would be like, you know, 2 or 3 months worth of salary. And, you know, I've been pretty good over the years. I think we've gotten as low as 1 month just based on stuff that happened. Like, you know, you need to replace a furnace or, you know, something major happens, a big plumbing thing or whatever. Like those are, you have to do something. You can't just sort of sit there and ignore that. So, you know, you do that and then you have to slowly build that stuff back up. But as long as I, you know, had this mindset, those things came first. And then once they got filled, it was like, oh, okay, now we can do these other things. And we've got the safety net. If shit hits the fan, we can always go back on that. And with this year, you know, when things started going bad in February, I was like, oh, thank God we've got a safety net here. And then as it got worse, I'm like, is that safety net really going to be enough? I'm not sure it's big enough here. Like this could get really, really ugly. And so we both sort of decided, because we saw that, you know, our spending dropped and I was still doing the same billables as before. We're like, okay, let's start sweeping extra in here, make it a bigger safety net. And in doing so, that gives us more options. If you don't end up using that safety net, then more opportunities are opening yourself. So like with a business, you know, I've saved up enough in recapture right now that I want to do this big marketing initiative and it's not an issue for me. Like I can say, all right, let's do it right now. And if somebody sends me an invoice and says, all right, I need $2,000 to get started, I'm like, great, here you go. Let's go. You know, I don't have to like scramble to find that $2,000 and pull it out of personal and move it over to the business, because that's a mental hurdle to get over. Like that really requires a lot of extra effort. And this was one of the discussing points that we had in the Slack group, was how long do you keep it in the business accounts before you sweep it over? And because there's, for a lot of people in this group, there's a big hurdle. Like once you sweep it over into your personal accounts, some people are like, yeah, if I needed it from the business, I just pull it back from personal. But several people commented to say, once it's in my accounts, it's my money. And now it's a mental hurdle for me to give it back to the business. But if I leave it in the business account, it's still my money. But the fact that it's in the business account means that I don't get to touch it yet until it reaches a certain threshold or until I've gotten a certain safety level or whatever it is. Like that, you know, there's a mental difference between the business account and the personal account. Doesn't matter that they're both in your name.
Yep.
But when you have it in one or the other, it changes how you think about it. And I thought that was very interesting, because I think that's true for me too. Like I will see all of my money in my business account and I'll be like, yep, that's business money. And then the minute I move it over into my personal savings account, it's like, nope, that's my money now. It was always my money. It was never any different between those two. But how I think about it, how I look at it, where I allocate it, what I want to do with it, how I would feel if I had to move it again, all of that changes as soon as I switch it.
Yeah, it's totally a one-way street for me. Like that, like I mean, I can't imagine needing to reinvest back in the business from personal, because I'm very, very, very conservative with like what I take out of the business. And I think that like having investors has been really healthy in that respect, because I have a lot more respect for it being like that one-way street now than I did before, and like much more kind of financially sound, because it's not just all my money now. Like it's mostly my money, but like other people definitely have a like right to know what's going on with it. And so like really judicious about what we spend money on and how I plan our cash flow and stuff like that. So I think that's been a really positive thing, like a really like, use the term like positive peer pressure with the team sometimes. Like, you know, we brought in another support person. She started yesterday. And like, for me, that's like positive peer pressure for Eileen, the person we already have in there, and vice versa. Like we added a third developer recently. That's positive peer pressure for the other two that are there, because they see, hey, like Alec is in here doing this stuff. But like, yeah, for me, that's been like positive pressure to really like take care of our finances, because like I am not a like, I don't know what the term would be, like, I don't want to say responsible, but like I am not inherently or like by nature like a super judicious person from a finance perspective. My wife is, and I'm only alive today because of her and because she set me straight. But yeah, I mean, very much like that. Yeah, it would be a disaster. Like if she and I hadn't met, I'd be a mess right now. So, but I think like something that I tell her is like, I can't be bad at this, you know, and it's just like not my nature to be like really good about it. And so I try very hard to be good at it. And so as a result, I'm kind of average, I think. But like, yeah, I have to like consciously pay a lot of attention to like cash flow and our balance in the bank and what are profit and losses and stuff like that, because it doesn't come naturally to me. And I think there are people that like it comes naturally to them, and there are people that it doesn't. We actually started teaching our kids about this recently. They're eight, just like 8 and 10. And we started teaching them about like, yeah, money and investing and stuff like that, just to try to get that stuff that like I didn't get when I was a kid, you know, talking about like being responsible with your money and saving and all that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. Yeah. So speaking of investing with your kids and teaching them to save and stuff like that, I'll tell you the story about what we did with our kids that has been wildly successful. So we're using an app called FamZoo. Dumbest name ever for an app. I have no idea why they chose to do this. They were talking about, you know, the real world jungle or whatever. But I'm like, what does that have to do with zoos?
Hey.
Anyway,
hey.
So dumb name for an app. Really excellent execution.
Okay, sounds good. I'm just finished up a podcast now.
So this is an app that you can download onto your phone.
Okay,
and
thanks.
It basically allows you to, it uses prepaid debit cards and through a bank in Texas. And so you can like fund your account and then distribute it to your kids' accounts. And you can use all kinds of things back and forth. You know, you could say, if you complete these chores and you check them off, then you'll automatically get a transfer of $5 or $10 or whatever. So yeah, there's lots of really clever stuff that you could do with it. We don't do all of that. The one thing that we did set up, we originally had it so that there was spending, savings, and then charitable giving. But we weren't really using the charitable giving piece of that the way that they intended it. We were still doing the giving. It just didn't work through their system. So it was like, this doesn't make sense. So we still have the spending and the saving. And, you know, the kids use that a fair amount. But the saving one, the way we encourage them to do that is that we offer our kids this astoundingly high interest rate. Like this is an eye-bleeding interest rate. We offer them 5% a month. So that's 60%
Whoa.
APR. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like this was insane. This is what we originally agreed to. And, you know, this basically is like free money for the kids. But it has, and, you know, they don't have like thousands of dollars in these accounts. We're talking like a couple of $100 per kid.
No.
So it's not, you know, we're adding like $10 a month in interest or something like that. So it's not like, oh, you know, they're causing, you know, financial ruin to the Rodenbaugh household. But what it has done is it incents them to make sure that they put most of their money in savings, that they don't spend a lot. And when they look at purchases, so, you know, they'll get gift money, birthday money, Christmas money, et cetera, all throughout the year. And most of the time, we'll take their gift cards. Sometimes they'll get an Amazon gift card. One aunt and uncle gives a Nordstrom gift card for reasons I still don't understand. But
who shops at Nordstrom?
My wife's aunt and uncle. But anyway, so okay. we took that and we're like, okay, we can use that. We'll give you the money that was on that and we'll put it in your account. And then they're like, put it in my savings account. I'm like, yeah, sure, of course. But, you know, then we go to things like the Renaissance Fair. And, you know, there's a lot of opportunities to spend unreasonable amounts of money there. But what's interesting is we basically hand each kid their debit card and say, you're free to do whatever you want within the amount of money that you have on this card. And they love this. Like, but they are so careful in their choices, because when you give them that card and their own money, suddenly they're like, well, is this the one thing I want to spend $50 on? Because, you know, I just got here and I don't know what else there is to look at. Or, you know, sometimes they're like, I was thinking about this all last year and I really wanted it. And they're like plunking down $87. And then the rest of the day, you know, they've got maybe another $100 and they're carefully selecting this here and there. But I'm watching them make these money decisions, and it's fascinating because they're way more empowered about larger spending choices at this age than I ever was. And, you know, they're making really generally good decisions. And, you know, there's always the occasional, oh, you know, can I have $5 to go throw the tomatoes at the guy that's insulting over here in the Renaissance Fair?
Right.
And I'm like, you're welcome to take it out of your money if you want. And they're like, okay. And so, you know, they'll take the money out and go do it. And then afterwards, you know, I can see that there's like, oh, that
it's
was
gone.
Fun.
I'll
yeah, it's
never
gone.
Have that $5
and that $5, like, that wasn't such a great choice, you know, but they got to do that whole transaction on their own, and they got to feel that personally. So it's way more impactful, and at such a lower risk at this point when they're, you know, between 11 and 16 to make these choices and decide, yeah, I screwed up with $5 here. That's way better than screwing up with $500 when you're 25, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah. You know, that makes a huge difference. And I think those are the kinds of money choices that you and I didn't get at that age that directly impacts the fact that now we're struggling more as adults, because all of my real finance stuff I had to learn in my early 20s. I had no real financial acumen that was given to me by my parents. I got my first credit card on my own and did all of these things without parental permission and learned some hard lessons along the way in there, including, you know, hey, don't rack up all your credit card debt, because that could be really shitty to pay off.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think it's been really interesting to see the difference between our two kids and their personalities and how that comes out, like, around money. So like one is very much like, yeah, we have the three envelopes, you know, give, save, and spend. And like all of it goes into the spend for one of them. And like most of it goes into the save for the other one. And like, that's just like really aligned with their, you know, with their personalities. But then like them talking about what they want to spend it on and save it for is like really interesting too. So, I mean, they're just, you know, 8 and 10. So it's like, they're just starting to figure this stuff out, but it's cool to kind of get them into that mode right now. Cause yeah, it's really formative for them to start understanding the power of money and their behavior around it at this age. Cause it's, yeah, like you said, it's super low risk right now, relative to what could happen later. So yeah, it's pretty cool to see like them starting to get into it.
Yep. Yep. And you know, I think one of the things that we as a society really struggle with, especially, and it's a cultural thing on top of that, but certainly in America, you know, we have this aversion to just talking about money and finances in general. I mean, there's all the kinds of articles out here on personal finance, but I think the reason that they're so successful is the fact that we don't have these average, everyday conversations around how should you save? What are responsible things you should be doing? Like, this is not standard parenting advice, or at least it didn't used to be standard parenting advice. And so everybody kind of has to learn it through the seat of their pants. And even more so with like founders and business owners, because, you know, I couldn't have told you what a P&L was when I was 21. And, you know, even at 31, I would have struggled to go through a P&L. 41, I started to get a little better at it. At least I was aware of what it was about. But now at 51, I finally am like, yeah, this is like, I know what this means. I know what the implications are for the business. I know what important things to watch for. I know the stuff where I've got slop room. I know what it's going to mean if I try to sell the business, and et cetera, et cetera. This is the kind of financial literacy that I think, you know, we need more discussions around, for sure.
Yeah. And so like, I think we'd love to hear from other folks that are thinking about their money differently or doing different things with, you know, either their kind of business finance or their personal finance with kids or not. Yeah. Shoot us your thoughts, podcast@roguestartups.com, or hit Dave and I up on Twitter. You know, Dave, I've not been on Twitter in like 2 months and it's great. I don't even have it. It's not on my phone anymore. Like, and it's, I don't care. Like, I don't, people DM me, I'm sorry. It's just not, I'm not there.
So if you want an actual response, you better DM me on Twitter.
Yep. Yep.
Cause I haven't deleted it from my phone. I still get on there and my kids are like, Dad, are you in the bathroom on Twitter? I'm like, oh shit. Yeah, that's me.
Oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, no, this is fun to chat through, Dave, and folks, you know, listening, if you have kind of thoughts or things that you do differently or think differently about kind of your business finance, shoot us a message. We'd love to hear from you and we kind of bring it up in the next episode. And if you haven't already, please share the podcast with someone who you think would enjoy it as well. And as we're coming up to the end of the year, you know, Dave, I know that I am super thankful for you and everybody who listens to the show and kind of participates and kind of gives back to our community here. It's really just like a wonderful thing to be a part of. So thanks to everybody.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.